I think we all have Bob Hoover stories. I was fortunate enough to work with him on multiple occasions, putting him out on stage. And Gentleman really describes him. David Hartman, he just threatened me. Because if I told you what he really does to prepare for a night like this, you would find it hard to believe because of the ease and the complete professional class that he has. And I'm in trouble already. David Hartman.
Thank you. Thanks, Steve. Hi, good evening, everybody. To start our Hoover evening, this is 5 or 6 minutes of Hoover, and then a couple of gentlemen are going to join us who happen to be pretty good aviators themselves.
I certainly hope you all enjoyed the flight. I've got a real soft spot in my heart for the good old Mustang.
And speaking of pilots, there are pilots, there are really good pilots, and then once in a while, a pilot comes along who is so extraordinary, both as a pilot and as a person in the air and on the ground, that it's impossible to adequately describe that person. There is a man who fits that description.
Oh, I see you spotted the name in the plane, Bob Hoover. He used to be a test pilot, one of the best. Today, he's manager of customer relations for North American's Los Angeles division, and he's the man who demonstrates this plane. Well, here he comes now. You know, he flies this plane in a business suit and without a parachute. Hi, Bob. We've just been admiring this beauty of yours.
Beauty she is, and she flies like a dream. Tell you what, folks, climb in with me now, and let's see what we can do.
In the air, in World War II, he fought to save our country from those who would try to take away our freedoms. On the ground, he has committed himself to our country's values and has always reflected those values in his own daily life so that we never forget who we are as Americans and how so many have given their lives to keep America safe and free. He soloed at 16, but then had to teach himself aerobatics to overcome air sickness. A few years later, in Air Corps primary pilot training, he was so good at aerobatics that his commander had him teach all of his instructors aerobatics. He flew combat in Europe, was taken prisoner in Germany, he escaped and commandeered a German Focke-Wulf 190 and flew it to Holland. After the war, as a test pilot, he flew hundreds of different models of airplanes. One flight, October 14, 1947, he flew chase on the Bell XS-1. That was man's first successful supersonic flight when the pilot lived to tell about it. Yes, he took that famous photo of the bullet-shaped rocket plane breaking the sound barrier. And who can ever forget the first time they saw Bob fly his Mustang and Shrike Commander in air shows around the world. Jimmy Doolittle introduced him as the greatest stick and rudder pilot who ever lived.
You know, if we were not here to remember Bob and to honor him tonight, we might as well be honoring, or we would be honoring, the two gentlemen who are going to join me right now. The first of these aviators soloed at 14. He was instructor pilot at 16. By the age of 18, he had 2,000 hours as a pilot. Military aviator, airline captain, experimental test pilot. He was an air race champion at Reno. In his logbook, he is logged as a pilot more than 50,000 hours, and he has flown more jet time as a pilot than any other pilot in the world. He has flown over 300 types of aircraft, more than 60 jet records he has set. He co-created the aerial cinematography system and on some 3,000 projects that we've seen on the big motion picture screens. Think Top Gun, for instance, all the aerial photography for the military, for industry. And he is just one of the great business executive aviators of all time. Welcome, please, Clay Lacy. This other gentleman, I think you've heard of as well. He's a national and international aerobatic pilot and award winner many times around the world. He also started flying as a teenager, as a crop duster. For 40 years, he's been flying air shows all over the world, won so many awards. He is the second recipient of a new award that was offered for the first time a year and a half ago at Uwe-Hadzi at Air and Space Museum in Washington. It was the Bob Hoover Lifetime Achievement Award in Aviation. The first recipient was Bob Hoover. The second recipient this past January in Washington was this gentleman, and his name is Sean D. Tucker. Welcome, Sean. And these two gents, by the way, are both inductees in the National Aviation Hall of Fame. No small feat. Clay, evening. When did you meet Bob the first time?
Well, it was August 1955 in Boise, Idaho. And I was up at summer camp with the Air National Guard. I was in the Guard of Van Nuys. We'd go to summer camp at Boise. And head of maintenance officer asked me if I would introduce Bob to the head of maintenance to help pick out an airplane and all this. And we went in there and started to talk about airplanes. And this head of maintenance said that they picked out the best airplane for him to do his demo in. Bob said, what's the worst airplane you have? And a guy named one. He came up with a number. And Bob says, I'll take that one. He said they are all the same, or at least they should be recovering the same. So anyway, he took it and went up. First thing he did was something none of us had ever seen before. Went to 2,500 feet, did a two-turn spin from 2,500 feet. And I mean, it was really something to see, and everything else he did, just the whole show, was only he could do.
What does that tell you about, one, about his flying ability, and two, about his attitude about flying and the airplanes that he wanted to fly?
Well, I don't know. No, I never really heard Bob say that was a bad airplane or a bad flying airplane. I feel the same way. Most all airplanes are good airplanes. And if there's such a thing as making him talk, well, he can make him talk, you know.
What was your relationship all these years? How many years did you... 50, 60 years you knew Bob?
Yeah, see, over 60 years. For the next 5 years after I met him, I would see him maybe six times a year socially and some deal. We'd go to dinner or something together. And then 1962, they were starting to get ready for the Reno races at the 64 Reno, and I started spending more time with Bob because they had, Bob was their real advisor of putting the Reno races together. And I became head in charge of Unlimited Pilots. So I met Bob at least once a month to talk about the way we were going to do something. But he was just such an outstanding person. And the thing I appreciate about Bob is that not only his flying, which I really appreciate, but what a gentleman. And a good, honest guy, you know, the best.
What was his sense of humor?
Well, it was good. He had a good sense of humor, but, you know, you had to kind of listen because he didn't joke about too many things. He kind of talked serious about most things. And if he joked, you should listen to it because it may have a real meaning. I always say about Bob, you know, he never said anything bad about anyone. Right. He was always complimentary. Even people that we knew weren't good people, you know, that he was tend to be complimentary and say only the good things. But I always say, if Bob tells you, you know, you better maybe watch out after that guy, that means you better really watch out. These guys are a real jerk.